Hello and welcome to another episode of Story Selling. My name is Elliot Rayner, and as always, we are going to speak to a product marketing expert about how they utilize the skill of storytelling within the field of product marketing. Within this episode, I'm going to be speaking with Theresa Geschwantner. Theresa is the head of product marketing for fintech superstar Konto. One of the reasons I wanted to speak with Theresa is learning about how quickly they turn around and release features, sometimes up to every 2 weeks. And I wanted to better understand how she and her team use storytelling as a weapon to keep up to pace as one of the fastest growing brands within the fintech industry. Welcome, everybody, and a big welcome to you, Theresa. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much. Great. It's end of day Friday. And I hope I'm not too brain dead for this podcast, but very excited to be here. Thank you.
Nice. No, really appreciate you joining us. You're someone we've met a few times now, and I've also had the pleasure of meeting your team, which was great. But before we go any further, maybe it'd be really great for you to explain a little bit more about the brand you're currently at and what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, cool. No problem. So I work at Konto. We are a French scale-up unicorn, and our mission is really to disrupt the financial services industry. So if anyone's ever tried to open a business banking account, they know the pain of, you know, waiting for weeks and weeks on end, queuing, having to bring a million different paperwork to the bank in person also. So we really tried to simplify that. We started there by allowing people to open a bank account in 10 minutes. And then now we're building on top of that with bookkeeping solutions, with spend management solutions, invoicing, supplier hubs, et cetera. So really trying to find, and I don't want to say the all-in-one because that's so, everyone says this. I think we really are trying to become that hub that's central where you don't need 17 tools to just manage your finances for the business.
Yeah, it seems to be a very unique brand. I got to know them through you, but then afterwards I see you guys everywhere. And truly to see scale up, there's a lot of brands that consider themselves growing fast. But when you look at Konto, it is quite remarkable. And you gave a great presentation at the summit where, correct me if I'm wrong, you were saying that you're basically releasing new features every other week, it seems.
Yes, I think we've kind of slowed down a little bit.
Well, thank goodness,
to be transparent. So for us, when we were fundraising, I think it was super important to make sure that we showcase our breadth and potential for revenue streams, etc. So that's why we also had this kind of foot on the gas pedal. I'm not saying that we've moved that off entirely. It just means that now I think, thankfully, also for my team, we're focused a lot more on shipping quality products. So these are probably larger features that take a bit more time, but then also are more complete and actually, you know, bring value to the user from day one, not like the MVP. And then
I mean, it makes perfect sense. And your audience is really interesting, is it? Because when you look at it, either a B2C or B2B, but it kind of, in my way I say, kind of blurs a little bit because it's maybe normal customers, but essentially a lot of your customers, and correct me if I'm wrong, are starting the business. They're becoming B2Bs through the process with you. Is how do you perceive your audience?
No, that's completely right. And I think that's what we're currently going through. It's a bit difficult because our bread and butter are freelancers and micro entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And they're one man or one woman shows. So you're almost talking to B2C in a way, for sure. But then as we're trying to scale, we're moving up market. And there it's more like we're talking to the CFO and it's a different type of conversation you're having with them.
So, I love that because it's a great example for the PMA audience, because I think we love to create massive differences between B2C and B2B, but ultimately your brand is almost an example of how maybe there's not too many differences, but maybe we'll get into that in a little bit. But as we get into storytelling, actually you reached out to me not too long ago to ask me to speak to your team about storytelling. And maybe that's a good place for us to start to ask you, why do you see storytelling to be an important skill for your team to know?
Yeah, that's a great question. And thank you again for taking the time. My team is using your methods all the time, which is super powerful. I think that storytelling is especially important in product marketing because, as you mentioned, and I really related to this in your talk at the Product Marketing Alliance Summit in Amsterdam, we think in stories and we remember things in stories and we understand things in stories. And our job as product marketers is really to take something that is extremely complex, maybe comes from a technical SaaS solution, and explain it in a really simple way for people to understand and be able to execute on, even if it's maybe 2 weeks later that they're trying it, the product, or mm-hmm. have that use case come up. And so I think that the better we are at telling really compelling stories, the more product adoption we will get, the more potential upsell we have for additional revenue, of course, and then also, obviously adoption leading to retention as well. So at the end of the day, and this is maybe a crazy connection, but I feel like storytelling can really have a huge impact on P&L of a business.
Absolutely. And I think it's a realization a lot of people I talk to in product marketing come to is that actually, oh, that's kind of a lot of the things I'm hearing about storytelling, the frameworks, the, like you say, making the complicated simple is what stories do. And that's probably when you ask a lot of product marketers, they'll say, well, that's my job and that's what I do. So when it comes to you as a professional, did you always recognize that storytelling was a skill you had, or is it something that you realized, this is something that is very valuable and I want to get better at it and started pursuing it?
That's a great question, actually. I'm a huge communicator, so my family will tell you that I never shut up, and that when I'm in the room, I talk all the time. So I think that as a whole, I am a passionate storyteller as a person. But I do think that this is an art and a science.
Yeah.
So I definitely feel that for us to be able to properly execute on it in our work, we do need to learn how to do it. And that's also where I think your session came in so valuably, because you can get carried away in the devil with the details, kind of, mm-hmm. when you know the feature inside out. And I think I've mentioned this to you before, but my team actually is involved in creating the product as well. So we really know the technical details. We know everything. So being able to take a step back and actually, again, try to put yourself in the shoes of the user is not as straightforward as you would think. So I definitely feel like it's a combination of both. I like it as a person, but you need to learn how to do it properly.
And it's funny what you say, because just from talking a lot, it's actually proven that more than 60% of our conversations are built around narrative. So if you're just talking a lot, you're having conversations with your family, you're storytelling. So it's not as if you're learning something that you don't already understand and utilize in your life. I love what you say about the idea of storytelling being an art and a science, because it's something that comes back again and again. You read books called The Science of Storytelling and The Art of Storytelling. One of my favorite examples is by the author Kurt Vonnegut, who he tries to tell stories through a framework, which is just good fortune and bad fortune for one protagonist. And mm-hmm. kind of shows on a graph, you know, different stories, famous stories from Cinderella to all these kind of things. And shows that, well, if you can break it down then like that, it really is a science. But at the same time, then gives examples of things like Hamlet or other stories where actually you'd never know if it's good fortune or bad fortune. So and usually those ones are the ones we call, that's a great piece of art. So it really does highlight that it is a little bit both. And it leads me into a question that I'm asking everyone who comes on the podcast, which is, as you mentioned, we're always telling stories as humans. Is the one story that you find yourself coming back to every year, whether it be a movie, a series, a myth, a book?
No, it's really interesting that you said that, because I thought there wasn't one, but as you just said this, I thought of Harry Potter, actually. Uh-huh, this sounds very random, but it's also part of the reason why I learned English was because I wanted to read the newest Harry Potter, which doesn't come out in German, and I had to wait. And so that's why I was like, Mom and Dad, I need to be fluent in English. That's how obsessed I am with Harry Potter. I think it's a beautiful way of storytelling. And actually, when I looked into it a bit more, I realized how scientific it is, because I don't know if you've ever seen how J.K. Rowling works, but she literally has an Excel sheet where she says the month of the year, the character, and then what's happening. We're in this, on the school grounds, we're in the classroom, we're, you know, something to do with the Voldemort, so the enemy in the series. So she really plots out her entire story. And as if you are a vivid reader of Harry Potter, you would know this, that things that happen in the first book end up turning around in the last. Uh-huh. So it just is incredible how she manages to really take you on a journey, I guess, throughout the 7 books.
And that's very rewarding. Like that, your brain loves that puzzle when you solve the murder before, or you go, that character, those little seeds that go into things, our brains naturally release chemicals when we do that. So yeah, it's a great example.
I think that's like my example, but in general, I feel like there is a lot of great stories out there that, in my opinion, just touch you. For me, that's the most powerful. If you find a way to connect with someone, I guess it's a no-brainer, but that for me is the most powerful. How can you find that human connection?
Yeah, the emotional side of it outside of the logic, which we'll come onto too. But your example of J.K. Rowling as well is something that I use in my workshops, which is an example of hard world building, where you know you don't even have to go that far, creating things that might not even affect the story, whether that's even for business, but you're creating this huge world that our brains love as well. So it's a really nice trick for any storyteller to know is to go above and beyond to create a world that might not even be significant for you to be able to tell a story of one boy wizard going from his journey, but yeah, the story arc.
You just want to be part of the world. Oh yeah. I was waiting for my letter for sure.
And so maybe this links to the work we did on the workshop, but it's one question I'm asking is, when you approach storytelling with your team or in your career, do you feel like you have a framework and a process set up to do it? Or is it more recognizing the value of storytelling and just bringing that in through just good marketing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think I have an answer, and I might answer some of your other questions as well, of two. Mm. One, I would say now, thanks to your workshop, we have a bit more structure as well. The tactical answer is yes, we do scoping for anything that we're trying to produce. So I give you a tactical example of an email where we really work on the scoping of the story, and we understand what is it that we want the user to do? Who is the user? How do they feel? What is their motivation and ambition? And then we really try with the pathos, ethos, and logos to try to incorporate that in the best way possible, depending on the action we need them to take, of course. So I would say that's what we do. And for that, we already align with all the relevant teams before we even write a single piece of content. So it's really like, let's all agree that this is the way that the direction that we're going into. And the second part of this answer was, I guess this is not a very strict structure, but it is something that's very unique to Contour. We work what we call the Contour way. So in the lean way of the Kyoto production system.
Interesting.
And one of the tools that we have as leaders, which I love, I had one today, is what we call Gemba.
Okay.
And Gemba in Japanese terms and in factory terms means go and see. So if you imagine a factory, you would literally have the factory head, they would put a circle on the floor in front of the factory line.
Yeah.
And they would put the manager into that circle, and they would need to look at the factory for so long until they would find an improvement.
Interesting.
And so what we use this for in product marketing is that when my team is starting to come up with a piece of content, anything, a success report, even, this is what we looked at today, they typically speak to customers to try to add qualitative insights with quantitative insights.
Yeah.
And for me, and it sounds very tactical, but I literally asked them to pull up the picture of the customer.
Yeah.
I asked them like, okay, so where do you think this guy goes in his free time? Like, what do you think he uses? An iPhone? Do you think he has a Samsung? Like, I really want them to be so in the shoe of the customer that when they tell the story, they tell the story to this customer.
Yes.
And of course, we know that we are very many, many lookalikes. So we assume that this story will not just work for them, but also for everyone else that is a construction worker in France.
It's really interesting because we're getting back to the discussion about B2C and B2B. I always argue that actually storytelling for B2B actually has some advantages. So I came from the sports industry, so we're looking at B2C, a certain trend or demographic. You don't really know them. You might put a persona to them, but you're trying to put it out there and hoping that you understand that demographic enough that enough of them shift over to you. Yeah. Whereas B2B, especially in smaller B2B, you actually might know the person, you know so much more about them. And that's an advantage always in storytelling and in product marketing. The more you know, the more you're going to be able to create better communications. But it sounds like you're almost taking your that very precise B2B into a B2C world as well, which is really interesting.
We try to do that. I think on that note, what is easier, because even my team, I think, asked you like as the same question, like how does B2B versus B2C compare? And if I think about this more, I feel like B2B, the only thing that we are, and maybe it's quite unique because we are a fintech, what we are a bit restricted by is that to create this human connection, it's a bit more tricky because we are, at the end of the day, somewhat their bank. So it's like we can't be jokey and funny. You know, we have to have a certain
credibility.
Exactly. And so it's a bit more difficult. We definitely have more strict tone of voice rules. And so I think I still think there is ability for us to obviously be great storytellers, but for the human connection, we just have to get creative of finding other ways for them to see us as the people who we are behind Konto and not the stiff bank.
Yeah. And hopefully when you do that experiment, that's usually the third part of my, the workshop, which is understanding more about yourself is another Japanese example, which we talked about, the ikigai, where if you do that experiment, you're going to find something authentic. You're going to find something that actually is not trying to replicate or not trying to build from the market, but from build from yourself. And there's countless examples of companies that have done that and tend to be the best companies. But to come back to, and maybe for the audience, the workshop that I ran with your team, you guys sent me an example of an email marketing piece. And we went through with an exercise that is part of a question that I'm asking all the guys as well, which is about this Aristotle's modes of persuasion. So Aristotle's modes of persuasion are to use equal levels of logic, emotion, and credibility, and to use that in a storytelling sense, which makes sense because we use stories to persuade. And we went through one of your emails, and as a team, we tried to identify anything that was in there, like, well, that's logic. We're saying it's going to save them this much money, or we're saying we really want to help you today to get more freedom with your finances. Well, that's very emotional. And to bring into that question, one of your team asked, well, which one of these three is the most important and which one should we lead with? And I very honestly said, I actually hope you guys can answer that, because I do think you need all three. But I think the mix and which one you lead with changes compared on your brand, on your market. And maybe it's too early, but have you got a feeling yet from experimenting of which one of those three is a good fit for you guys?
Yes. And that was a great answer also, and a great question from the team, because it is tricky. I think you also shared a little bit more thoughts on the channel as well. So where is this message being sent? Which I think also comes into play. I'd say as a whole, we realize that credibility is very important for us, especially in markets like Germany, where, you know, we go against traditional banks who have been around hundreds of years. And usually even in business banking, you have your personal banker. So you have somebody you trust and you always have had around. So that's very important for us as a whole, I would say. But then I feel like where we also have an advantage, and what we've noticed, what we've tested more and more recently in our communication, actually the emotional side of things, we have this opportunity because we're young and innovative to play more on this.
Yeah.
And I really see that working well, especially because these traditional players create so much frustration, anger, that we can play on that more. So like, oh yeah, we get it. You know, it's tough. We don't want to waste 4 hours doing receipt management either. So there is really an opportunity for us to play on these two in particular. And then I think with Logos, we've been trying, but I haven't seen that to be like the most compelling in our use case just yet. But again, we're still testing and learning.
Yeah, I had an interesting conversation about actually with the Logos. You need it there. You can't not have it. Because at the end of the day, before you sign, you're going to want to do your due diligence. And if this, okay, you've sold me emotionally, I'm in. But if I do then my final bit of research and it's not there and you guys don't look legit, then so it's almost like you do have to have it, but you almost don't have to lead with it. When I look at what you're describing about the other banks, which is so interesting because they're so, it's almost like a generational shift. It's like Gen Z and millennial, but for brands, old banks have a very almost regal, trustworthy brand that they push, rightly or wrongly. And it actually takes me back to something else we've done in the workshop as well, which is the idea of brand archetypes. Mm-hmm. That you always exist in one of these 12 archetypes. And I think that's very interesting what you guys are doing, is that making a clear shift that there's not many banks that are occupying that more younger, freer, emotional level, maybe because they think that that's not what people want to hear from banks, but maybe that's not what their audiences did back then.
Yeah.
But it does feel like it now. And it brings me actually back to something I saw you post on LinkedIn this morning. I saw you showed us a short video with one of your team represented, and it felt very human. And it felt like someone you might not see as usual your representation for a financial institution. So I really thought it was a nice way of showing off your brand. But maybe you could talk about the process of creating that video and how you and your team approached it.
Yeah, and thanks for that. That's I'm going to tell Rita and the team. Great. Everyone is very excited about this how-to video concept. Mm-hmm. So I think this came out of for a couple of reasons. One, we realized, as I mentioned before, B2B banking, especially, difficult to create this human touch. How can we make sure that our customers realize that we are the ones building the product, and we're just like you and us, like we look like you, it's, you know, we're the same. And so I think that's where we realized that showcasing the people that actually worked on the product, because mm-hmm. Rita built this with the product team and the tech team.
It's not an actress. It's someone who knows nothing about the product or the audience.
So for us, I think it was super important. And I think that's also something that's very special to product marketing, because typically in companies, we are the closest to the customer because we are the voice of customer as well. Yeah. And so I think it was a great full cycle of, okay, we've interviewed you, we've asked you, you've given us this feedback. I'm Rita. I probably talked to one of you mm-hmm. and now I built it and here it is. And I'm really excited to share it with you. So it was one hand to give that human touch to a brand that's where it's not as easy, I guess, to showcase the behind the scenes. And then secondly, we also are realizing that our product is becoming a lot more complex. So it's easier to show the flows and the user experience in a story rather than feature step one, step two, step three, you know.
And to do it visually with a human, which is going to be always a lot easier to do that. But Teresa, thank you for your time. I really enjoyed having this discussion with you. For everyone listening, I'd really encourage you to follow not just Quanto's success and business practices, but Teresa, I know you're very active in the product marketing community and you write a lot of stuff. So I'd also really appeal to everyone to follow what you're doing as well. And thank you for your time. And I look forward to speaking soon.
Thank you very much, Elliot. I really appreciate it. And we're taking a masterclass on a
Sunday. Oh, great. Thanks for that. Well, I look forward to it. Thanks again. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if you're interested in continuing your storytelling journey, you can do so right here with the Product Marketing Alliance. Storytelling Certified is 100% self-paced online course spread over 5 modules, 47 chapters, and over 3 hours of video content. Featuring 9 storytelling templates and frameworks, including the Story Engine Canvas, so that you can immediately start ideating and experimenting with great product stories. Find out more at productmarketingalliance.com.